Hi, this is Jenny Chamberlain, and welcome to my Southern Utah Housing Podcast. This season, we're talking about attainable housing.
Today, I'm interviewing Brad Stuckey. Brad Stuckey is the Senior Vice President of Commercial Loans at the Bank of Utah. Is that right?
That's correct.
You're also a member of the Resource Board for Sun Country Home Solutions.
Yes.
Thanks for talking to me today, Brad. So I wanted to start by having you tell me a little bit about yourself and about what your work is, maybe a little bit about your service as a member of the Resource Board for Sun Country Home Solutions.
Well, I was born and raised here in St. George. I've lived here the majority of our lives. Prior to being a banker, I've been a banker for a little over 20 years now. Prior to that, I was actually a real estate developer.
Oh, really?
And one of the things that we did with our development company was affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's always been something that has been near and dear to our hearts. As a banker, I've continued to try and be in places and do things that would promote affordable housing. Being a native of this area, I know how important it is for those that were born and raised here to be able to stay here and afford to live here. And I know that's a challenge right now.
Yeah. So. How have things changed over the time? From the beginning when you worked as a developer till now, what differences do you see?
Yes, the major differences are essentially the inflation of the land and the building costs and so on, which is mm-hmm. normal.
Yeah.
And so on, just over the years, that a home is, contrary to what some people say, is a good investment because it does generally appreciate in value.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're buying a home, you can have that asset that you will pay for over time and have equity and so on that you can use in your later years
mm-hmm.
with different mortgage products. And actually, when you get to the point where you're ready to retire, and it can be a pretty good nest egg depending on what you do.
How did you end up serving on the resource board for Sun Country Home Solutions? Did you start there when you were a developer, or did you kind of join that after you?
No, I actually joined that after I've been on different boards for affordable housing, and the Sun Country Home Solutions is the most recent that I've been on,
mm-hmm.
and have been on that board for probably 4 years, I believe. My position there is to help those that are in the organization to locate, find resources for the development of affordable housing, because that organization does develop affordable housing,
mm-hmm.
but it starts from the ground up. And so I help them with locating capital,
mm-hmm.
loans, favorable mm-hmm. loans, but also land, builders that are willing to work and help contribute to make this something that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
In Washington County.
Cool. What led you to be interested in serving in that capacity in the first place? And, you know, how did your interest start in affordable housing?
Yeah, it started because I was in that position
uh-huh.
at one time. I was a first-time home buyer.
So you needed it.
I needed it.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't afford a large home. We started out in a starter home, a typical affordable home in a small subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of the subdivisions I was developing
mm-hmm.
and with my partners. That's where I got started. I was filling my own need
yeah.
and realized that there was a great need for many others that were just in our same situation, just starting out, wanting to be able to get a leg up and have the American dream of home ownership.
Do you remember what size your first house was?
Yes, I do remember exactly. It was a four-bedroom, two-bath home,
mm-hmm.
and it was 1,348 square feet on a 6,000-square-foot lot.
Yeah, that's like just what everybody needs right now, too.
It is. It is. And the problem is that there's very few people that, and it goes back to zoning,
yeah.
because very few things can do a 6,000-square-foot lot now. Mostly what we're seeing now, and I think it's a good thing, is townhomes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the next affordable thing, but even those are...
In the current market, even those are pretty high.
They are.
They're getting really challenging.
A lot of them are being built. I see different sizes,
mm-hmm.
which is good, but most of the ones I'm seeing are probably 1,600 to 1,700 square feet and higher.
Yeah.
We probably need to, in my opinion... need to figure out a way to do maybe smaller, even though it's more
mm-hmm.
cramped for the families, it still would be more affordable.
Yeah. Well, and family ages and sizes differ, you know.
That's
when
correct.
You have teenagers, they need more space than when mm-hmm. you have small children. And
yes.
I can see how you could use for everybody.
Absolutely.
Need it yes. for everybody. So can you tell me a little bit more about your history in developing affordable housing? So it sounds like you got into it to help your family or you.
Yes. Yes. Well, I, again, born and raised here. And when I graduated high school and I served a mission for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, came back, back to live with my parents and home and went to what was then Dixie Junior College. Met my wife and got married. And then we went up north to go to school. And we didn't think that we would be able to come back because of employment and so on of what I was going to be doing. It was just the economy and the type of things just wasn't conducive to that. And so went up north, went to school, and upon graduation, I started work for a real estate development company that developed shopping centers and office buildings and warehouses and so on. And so it wasn't necessarily residential development, but I got involved in development and was up north working for several years and had the choice to either go back to Chicago to work in the company I was working for, home office and kind of do more national type development of the different projects that they had across the nation. Or I had a fortuitous phone call from someone that had an investment company or a group of investment companies that had a lot of land. And they said, if you will come back to St. George and help us develop this land that we own, you know, would like to have you do that. And so that wasn't a hard decision. It was either Chicago or St. George. And so we came back and at that time were able to buy an affordable home because we were just, again, starting out on this new type of career. And at the time, we formed a partnership with the Entz Brothers Construction, which was the original Entz Brothers Construction, Jay Entz and Quentin Entz and Paul Entz. Our partnership was that I would take the land and develop it, design the subdivision and develop it, and then they would take it from the finished lot to a finished home and do the sales and so on. So we had a partnership, but our main projects were affordable projects.
Yeah.
And they were over by the Red Cliffs Mall. And several, we developed close to 500 lots, affordable homes in that area. So that's kind of where I got the start and the interest and then just kind of grew from there.
That's cool. It seems like Entz Homes still cares about that. Like
they
I've
do.
Just been
yeah.
looking at even their new construction stuff. They've been, they try to keep on top of that stuff that's
we,
real
we
for entry level.
We have been blessed in our area with a lot of very good local builders. But we've also had some regional and national builders that have come into the market that are excellent. We've been very blessed that way.
What financial tools and programs are out there to help people with affordable housing in the lending space? Because I know that's your area of expertise.
Yes, and that is kind of a critical area. The first critical area is the base price of the home.
Yeah.
That's really the first thing and the biggest hurdle. But in terms of the lending, a lot of times, because of the price of the home, the homes above like $400,000 and so on, to have a down payment typically of 20% of something like that is just a big stretch for someone that's just starting out.
Yeah.
And so there are a number of programs that most mortgage companies and banks have access to that do home mortgages. The first one is a program called Home Possible, which is a Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac type program. And it's a conventional low down payment program that's designed for the first-time home buyer, and the down payment on that is as little as 3%.
Okay.
And then you have what you often hear of, it's called an FHA mortgage program. They are a little bit higher, 3.5% down. And then there's Utah Housing. And Utah Housing can be up to 100% financing.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not going to go through all the details and so on. So if you're looking for a home and you need to qualify for that, get with your mortgage broker or your local bank that does mortgages and ask about the Utah Housing or the Home Possible or the FHA mortgages. There's a new program that just recently was introduced by Utah Housing called the Assistance Program. And that is a $20,000 assistance for down payment, closing costs, a rate buy down, just the needs of kind of help get that little extra oomph that you need. But it is specifically for new construction, or if the home is already built, then it can never, it you have to be the first person that it's a new
that
home
owns
that,
it.
That owns it. Yes.
Okay.
It can't be a resale of any type. And then there's another program called the Home Start Grant. Now, the assistance program is the $20,000 payment assistance is a loan.
Okay.
But it's on very, very favorable terms, and I'm not going to go into that, but you'll need to get the specifics from your mortgage person. But the Home Start Grant is $7,500, which is a grant.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be tied into the other programs and can be used for down payment or closing costs. But you have to, in order to qualify that, you have to be 80% of the median income or below to qualify. And in our market area, that's about a $60,000 to $65,000 salary. So if you're over that, you don't qualify. But if you're below that, you would qualify for that additional grant.
Mm-hmm. So then you run into the challenge of, is there anything on the market that you can buy that you qualify
that
for at 80% of
the median
income?
That's the thing that many different organizations in our area are working on. The Sun Country Home Solutions, they call it the HAC or the Housing Affordability Coalition that's around and so on. You're familiar with a lot of these organizations. They're all trying to work towards that.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's obviously because it hasn't been solved. It's not an easy problem to solve.
Yeah.
I think what's going to have to happen is we're going to need to have a program that includes both the landowner, the government in terms of zoning and impact fees and so on. Not everybody's going to have to work. It's not we're a lot of times too many people say, well, if the government would lower the impact fees, it would work. Or if the developer would just contribute more in the land and reduce their profit, or if there's better zoning or anything. Everybody has to kind of participate in order to make it work. I think one other thing that hasn't been maybe adequately explored is new housing types.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there's a stigma with manufactured housing, but
there
have been so many advances in the design and how they can be built and so on to make it a lot more affordable. I think we need to start taking a look at that and develop the land, but then maybe put some of these homes that are manufactured, and I'm not going to tout anybody's product, but there's several Southern Utah companies that are doing excellent work that if I was developing subdivisions, I would probably use some of our land and tie in with them and have them provide the housing, and we'd provide the lots, and it would come in at an affordable amount, but everybody would still make a fair profit.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that you bring that up, because it seems like, I liked how you said, there's going to be multiple people who need to participate in this, because it seems like a lot of times the zoning and the CCNRs are forbidding things that are affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think until we start allowing subdivisions in which people can put manufactured homes, then we're not going to see them happening. And I know I've had, for a long time, I was taking leads from an online source, and I had many, many people call me and ask about a certain lot and say, can I put a manufactured home on there, or can I put a whatever? And often it wasn't, it was restricted by the restrictions and the and those things. So I would love to see that too. And especially where technology advances, it seems like a lot of our problems in the world have often, we've thought they were insurmountable, and then technology came in and helped us solve it. And I feel like that's maybe an underexplored.
It is. I agree. And I hope that we'll start to see that, because you are seeing some of these home designs and so on. They're actually quite attractive. They're not the boxy manufactured homes that you would expect. In fact, one of the things that I'm financing is a subdivision that's out of state for affordable housing. And it's a combination between stick-built homes and manufactured homes.
That's great.
And the municipality really needed workforce housing, they called it, up there. And so they allowed the developer to zone a higher density in a certain portion of their subdivision. They're doing clustered lots and so on smaller lots and with manufactured housing and shared garage type. So they're twin homes, but they're not twin homes and they're manufactured.
Living space
wall. Yeah, there's no living space shared wall, but the garages are attached.
Yeah.
And
I think that's a great solution.
Yeah. Very, very creative. And it was the developers that are not getting, you know, as much as they could, but they, because the city wanted it so bad, they agreed to, everybody kind of came together,
said,
let's fill this need and everybody will win.
I love it. So interest rates are really high right now. What suggestions do you have for people who are trying to find housing in this type of high rate environment?
Yes. I'm afraid I don't have a magic pill for that. interest rates are going to be what they're going to be. However, that will also impact the sales of homes.
Yeah.
And so as home sales slow because of interest rates, and we're already seeing a little bit of this now, and I'm not here to say that we're going through a downturn or anything. I don't believe we're going to do that, but I do feel like there will be maybe a little bit more movement on the part of sellers and builders to maybe make some concessions on helping with closing costs.
Yeah.
Or maybe helping with using some of these programs that I talked about to buy down an interest rate so that the payments become more affordable.
Yeah.
And so I think those are the solutions that we should look to during a high interest rate environment.
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't work for your particular situation, then work and save and live in your parents' basement or whatever you need to do. I'm sorry, I don't have better news for you, but one thing that will happen is that times will get better.
Yeah.
It always does.
It's a cycle.
And it's the same also when things get really good, we also have to remember, well, times will get tougher.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I think it's funny that you bring up living in your parents' house because I mean, that's one of the primary reasons that I've been so interested in this because I've got a senior in high school and I'm just seeing that, like, how are they ever going to afford this?
Mm-hmm.
But I remembered what I was wanting to say earlier, and that was when you talk about things like modular homes and manufactured homes.
Yes.
I think sometimes they get an unfair stigma because a lot of people who've been in the housing market for a while, they get spoiled because they can afford a nice home because they bought one and then they could sell and buy a little bit nicer and move their way up. And they forget when you're young, you just need a place to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Or when you're first entering the housing market, whatever it takes to get you into there, if it's affordable, that's what you're willing to buy. And I have a friend whose daughter was a young adult. She's just college age right now. And they went to visit some friends who were living in a modular home. And she's like, I love this. I'm going to buy a house just like this.
Yeah.
When it, you know, and the affordability was a huge selling point for
her.
They're
well built and they have good quality. And because they're factory built, there's economies of scale and so on. And I would encourage your listeners to maybe do maybe a little bit of an experiment and get on YouTube and look for manufactured homes or pre-built homes or just kind of look at those and you'll be amazed at what's really out there.
Might be a fun
or tiny homes or
rabbit holes.
Things like that and just do some exploration. You'll be surprised.
Yeah. And I think that, like, you see a movement toward minimalism, and the young people love that, and the tiny homes really appeal to them.
Yes.
So, and I can see that. I mean, minimal doesn't work for me right now because I have four kids at home.
Yeah.
But when we were young marrieds and didn't have it, like, we didn't need all that space. We didn't have a lot of stuff to fill it up.
One thing I'll also say that another trend that we'll probably start to see is more ancillary dwellings on a lot that will be, they call it a mother-in-law suite, but actually it could be children's, you know, adult children's.
It's going to be your son or daughter-in-law.
Yeah. And, but that's, you know, that,
that's
a very real possibility that I think would be a good thing if we, again, that's a zoning type of a thing that would allow that. And it just helps give a leg up for a time. And so on, and they can be kind of self-contained, but kind of a tiny thing, but it's still a space that they can call their own.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of that, a lot of thought about that, a lot of legislation on that over in the Hurricane Leverk and Tocqueville side. Has St. George been similar to that?
I've heard rumblings on that. I haven't I haven't seen any or paid any attention to the specifics of that. So maybe that's, I can't answer that. Yeah. I don't want to
throw, it's another podcast don't want to
throw
me to
St. George under the bus by any means, because they're an excellent city to work with, and they have great concerns for their residents as well. So they have been really working. Every municipality that I have been aware has been really struggling with this. I think one of the things that we also need to bring up, that as I talk with the various council members, they would like their constituents to also realize that when people come in for a zoning that want maybe a little higher density so that they can do attainable housing, the pushback that they get from the residents that are nearby that basically make it very hard for them politically to do these kinds of projects. And the people that are there, and again, I was very involved in this because I got the zoning for our projects, and we were, you know, in the midst of some other residential, but we were far enough out that we didn't have quite the opposition that we probably would have had nowadays if we were to find a piece of property in the middle of something and try to do that. But if the residents would also realize and maybe pay more attention to the design and what is being proposed, rather than just have the knee-jerk reaction, oh, this is high density, it means it's low income and crime and traffic and all of this. That's not the case. If you've got the right concept and plan, which most cities are going to make sure happens, it will be a very nice neighborhood, and the people that will be in it will be your daughters and sons and your grandchildren.
Yeah.
And those are the kind of neighbors you want.
Exactly.
It's not going to be drug addled and ridden and you know, cars up on blocks and things like that. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's true. So what, we've talked about a couple of these, but do you have any other innovative ideas that you've seen in the affordable housing space, whether funding ones or building ones?
I don't really have much more to add, other than I think if we all are willing to be a little more creative and open to listening to each other, I think we can make some progress. And I think there's progress being made. It's just a really difficult program. There's just so many stakeholders that have to be involved and contribute, but not at the expense of the others. It has to be a win-win for everybody.
Yeah.
It has to be fair for everybody.
It does. And it is hard. Like I serve on the Planning Commission in Tocqueville. And so what you were mentioning a minute ago about the public forum, boy, there are some nights where I look at the agenda and I just dread going in because I know what we're going to hear.
Yes.
And I'm just, you know, worried about it. And we haven't had a ton of density on ours because Tocqueville is still so rural. It's just challenging.
I have been to some city council meetings and been involved in some when I was doing development, where we would bring the concept in and actually, rather than have a confrontational, but just more of an informational. And I would oftentimes, even before I got to the city council, I would go out and meet with the nearby residents and say, here's what we're thinking, and this is kind of what we're planning, and this is why, and so on. And the communication with the existing residents really helped.
Yeah.
It didn't solve everything, but I was able to, not in an antagonistic, and they didn't feel like they had a gun to their head because they weren't having to go before and try and stop a vote. It was just more of a discussion. This is what we're wanting to do. And oftentimes we'd get good ideas and good input. And other times they would look at it and say, oh, well, yeah, this is something that we would like here.
Yeah. And I've started to try to be a voice for that in Tocqueville. And we just had a vote against, because they were saying, well, should we do this zoning for smaller lot sizes? And I was like, yes, we should, you know. And there were four or five of us, there must have been five, because they voted against it, but two of us voted for it, and we disagreed back and forth, and I was pleasantly surprised by how we didn't get heated. We all just shared what we thought. I mean, I got a little emotional because I was like, my children, you know. But the next time, one of the ones who he and I often disagree, he came up and shook my hand and was like, hey, I really appreciate your perspective. So that's one thing I love about these decisions being made on a city level, because you can, like, you do have a chance to change somebody's mind. You know, you have that opportunity to hear what your neighbor thinks. And I love your approach that you did of talking to the neighbors first, because sometimes when we do put more heads on a problem, we do come up with better and more creative solutions. Yes.
Well, we found that.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you see? We've talked about a lot of these, but do you see any other challenges to the creation of affordable housing, and what, and any other creative ideas for overcoming those challenges?
I think we've hit kind of on the major, major challenges, but also possible solutions. But again, if we're willing to be open and creative and talk to one another, there may be some things that we haven't considered that might make a difference.
Oh, I'm starting to hear it. So our city planner in Tocqueville brought up the idea of missing middle housing.
Yes.
What does that mean to you? Like, if our listeners hear that out in the wild, what should they be thinking when they hear missing middle?
I think when I hear that term, I think townhomes.
Okay.
Because in our market, it used to be single-family homes, single-family homes, single-family homes. And for years and years, anybody that would propose a twin home or a patio home type of a concept, it just wouldn't succeed because people weren't willing to do it. It was always, I'd had to be a single-family home on a lot. And even if it was in a planned unit development, it was still a single-family home on a lot. And it was a very small lot in a PUD. And now you're starting to see alternative types of housing where the missing middle would be a townhome or the ancillary dwelling. On a single family lot, like the mother-in-law casita, things like that, or fourplexes, or different things like that, just stacked housing that you start to see in the not the inner cities, but more the outskirts of a lot of cities.
Urban.
Yeah, more urban, and you just have to evolve that way, and that becomes what you have to do in order to meet the needs and fit the affordability.
Thank you. So how do you think that the main players in the affordable housing space can meet the challenge of providing affordable housing? So it sounds, I mean, I feel like you kind of just answered that question as far as like missing middle. Yeah. I just remember being young and married, and there was subsidized housing out there, which I think, like, if we're talking about the middle between what? Between subsidized housing and between expensive housing.
Correct.
There's all these workers that need a place to live,
absolutely,
but they make too much money to qualify for subsidized.
So and that's when you get into the FHA and the different programs that we discussed. Except for the grant where you need to be below the 80% of the median income. But I think it just kind of goes back to those that are really interested in the product, willing to develop those kinds of things, need to have a dialogue with what their customers would be, and also with those that would be approving the zoning. It just has to be kind of a magical formula that people come together and are willing to. I think we'll see some of that. I know that without going into a lot of detail, I know of some things going on behind the scenes that people are trying to find additional land through various ways and means so that the land, very base price of a home is a little less to begin with. But then you have, you know, how far out is it, and how expensive is it to develop, and so on. Again, there's things that are happening, but it's just not an easy thing to solve, or we would have solved it.
Yeah. I know I see in some of my studies, I've come across the idea that the transit is a huge piece in this that I think a lot of times we don't even talk about. But yeah, I can find an affordable house out in Burl. But then is it affordable for me if I have to drive an hour and a half to work and might have to pay for the gas?
$400 or $500 a month because of our gas prices.
Which may as well make your mortgage more unaffordable down here in town.
I realize that in a very real way because I live in Pine Valley. And commute about 40 miles each way and so on. But that's a choice I made. I think another thing that adds to our difficulty is that we live in such a beautiful area, such a temperate weather, and such nice people, and great landscape and scenery and quality of life. And so people want to come here. And so that kind of bids the pricing up.
That demand.
That adds to that. And so that makes it even harder. Which is, it's a good thing that we have what we have and we're grateful for it. But it just adds that other dimension to our affordability.
Yeah, we can't all just start being bad neighbors
No.
in order to try to solve the problem. problem. Yeah. Well, is there anything else that I should have asked or brought up? I think we've talked about all the things I kind of wanted to cover.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for letting me come interview you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Southern Utah Real Estate Podcast with Jenny Chamberlain. I hope you'll think about subscribing and give the podcast a review if you found it valuable. If you have feedback or ideas to make this podcast better, check out my website, jennychamberlain.com, and leave me a message there.